Hello and welcome back to the Fantasy Ramble. This is episode 7 since we restarted, and it is the first episode that we're recording since there have been new Premier League champions. At the time of recording, Liverpool won the league last night as City were beaten off of Chelsea in a 2-1 victory for Frank Lampard's side, which saw City mathematically knocked out of the title race. But it's been a long time coming, and I'm sure that we'll speak a lot about it in the coming weeks, both on this podcast and on the other content that we'll be putting up on Energy Sport. If you're finding us on Spotify, feel free to follow us up at the top of the kind of podcast feed so you don't miss a single episode of the podcast when it comes out. Follow us on Twitter at Fantasy Ramble, where all four of today's hosts and our two waiting in the wings will be uploading their predictions for the following game week and all game weeks to come. And make sure to keep your eyes peeled for our Premier League takeaways article live on Energy Sport. Should be getting that up to you by this evening. Get three co-hosts joining me, Jack Donnelly, today. First of which, he'll be very happy to be here just so he can gloat more than anything else. His team, after waiting 30 years, have finally won a Premier League title. Graeme Sinclair, how does it feel?
It feels wonderful, Mr. Donnelly.
You just sound so... It's in the best mood I've heard you in a while, to be fair.
Oh, it's amazing. It's strange. It's like, I'm sure we might talk about it a little bit more. But it's kind of a bizarre feeling for a multitude of reasons, but it's also completely overwhelming. And I'm just in an amazing feeling. I was having fun yesterday, let's put it that way.
I take it you're still feeling as good as you would have done had it gone down to the wire at Anfield on the last day. The fact that you've been so dominant throughout, it doesn't take away from the fact that it's still it's your first league title in your lifetime and a lot of other fans' lifetimes, so it must be just the best possible feeling you could ask for, despite the fact it's kind of been set in stone for weeks now.
I don't really know. I was thinking about this myself. I think at the end of the day, it's good to get it done this way, but there would be nothing like winning it on the last day of the season. Mm-hmm. Especially, like, but at the end of the day, winning it in such a dominant fashion, you're not going to complain about it, in a sense.
No.
It would be a more of an outpouring of emotion if it happened the last day, but it'd also be a horrible feeling leading up to that.
Yeah.
It'd just kind of be like almost like a relief. It's always like, I always used to say that, like, it's better to be in a relegation battle than just be like a mid-table Premier League team, because at least you've got something to celebrate if it goes your way.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it's kind of a strange one, but they won the league, so I'm not going to complain.
Of course you won't. And someone else who's not going to be complaining at all, other than me, is our next co-host, Jamie McIntosh. Obviously, our side, our boys in blue, managed to beat the other boys in blue, or luminescent, multicoloured, whatever strip they had on last night. A 2-1 victory, which was probably the best result we could have asked for, really, Jamie.
Well, definitely. I mean, Liverpool will get all the headlines this morning, and rightly so. But you know, I wouldn't begin to underestimate how huge the 3 points is for Chelsea in their quest to not only secure a top four spot but possibly sneak third place.
It's looking more and more like a possibility that Chelsea could actually clinch third with Leicester's struggles. But if Leicester are to fall away, do you think that they would remain in the top four and fourth, or are you expecting one of the other of the chasing pack to snatch fourth from out under their noses?
I said during the week that I wouldn't be at all surprised if Manchester United were pushing up into the top four at Leicester's expense.
That brings us on to our final co-host quite nicely, that does. I like what you've done there. Well, Graeme got to celebrate a league title, and Jamie and I got to celebrate our club almost pushing more fiercely towards a top four finish. Struan Garvey got to celebrate his club's first hat-trick in 7 years.
In the league.
Oh, just to specify, in the league, okay.
So I think we all know I've been celebrating the most over this past week, but... Yeah, it is what it is. Not too fast. Knew everything was coming and that. It's, yeah.
How have you viewed this week, this game week as a whole? Because we were kind of struggling to figure out what to write about for the takeaway article in the group chat the other night, weren't we?
Well, I think it's one of those game weeks that it'll just be remembered for Liverpool winning the title, and rightly so. I think pretty much every other game apart from Chelsea City has almost been just made irrelevant, really. But yeah, there's been some exciting moments. I got two predictions spot on from our league one, which is quite cool, considering last week I got absolutely nothing right. So we'll take that away.
take that away. I've not tallied up the points for that yet. We'll get onto that and keep you updated with that on Twitter with our predictions as well.
Can I ask you, Jamie and Jack? I saw a lot of kind of like neutral and Chelsea fans saying it was kind of disrespectful when the BT commentators didn't only mention Liverpool in the last 5 minutes. Did you think that, or were you, did you completely get it?
I think I can. I understand it, and you know, as I said earlier, it does. Liverpool will get all the headlines, and rightly so. But you know, I think it's hard to say, because I think obviously when the thing I look back to is that Chelsea Tottenham game, and it was the same with yeah. Leicester. You know, they had the camera kept panning to Jamie Vardy's kitchen or living room or whatever it was, and I was thinking, oh well, you know, it's Leicester, it's quite a big deal, fair enough. And I suppose you could say the same because it's Liverpool's first Premier League title in, you know, 30 years or whatever, and you know, you could maybe understand it. But I wouldn't say I was necessarily angry or thought it was disrespectful or that. I can completely understand why all the headlines and all the attention goes to Liverpool.
I'm just quite glad it was on BT Sport and not Sky, because the Liverpool presence on a Sky panel would have been almost overbearing at points. I think if it had been the Sky commentators with the likes of Carragher, it would have been Liverpool from the first minute, not just the final five. So I'll happily take the final 5 minutes of a big win for us being talked about, the one of the most dominant title winners we've ever seen. So
yeah,
I'm not too bothered by it. We got the win at the end of the day, so that's all that I really care about. We'll get cracking with this week's few games that we've picked out. This game week is a bit of an interesting one because it's been stretched basically to cover the entire week. So we go from the first game kicked off on Saturday with Villa Wolves right up until City Liverpool next Thursday, because of course over the weekend and midweek we do have FA Cup quarterfinals. Speaking of that competition, just before we get on to the Premier League games that we're going to talk about, are there any shouts for who's going to go on and win that one at all?
I'd say City or Chelsea will probably go on to win it. That could be the final as well, potentially.
Graham, are you getting any input for that at all?
I don't know who's in it, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I was going to say, I can't even remember.
There's United, Norwich, Newcastle City, Sheffield, Arsenal, Chelsea, Leicester. Was the
fixture. I should have read up about it, but
yeah.
I don't care.
That's fair enough.
I would say United, personally. I think they should breeze past Norwich. Whether Norwich will just turn their attentions to their very, very slim hopes of Premier League survival, or whether they've already given that up and will focus on possibly a cup run, I don't know. But I can't see Man United not getting past Norwich. So I would say Man United to get to the final, certainly. I'm not Chelsea, Leicester, I'm not sure. Again, I'm not sure how serious those two teams will take it. But I think Man United could be a safe bet for that.
It'd be quite interesting to see Norwich end up doing a Wigan from back in 2013, I think it was, where they
Ben Watson, yeah,
win the FA Cup and still get relegated. Jamie mentioned them there. They're going to be one of the talking points for our first game that we're going to be covering on today's episode, as Everton are taking on Leicester at Goodison Park. Last time out, Everton beat Norwich, who Jamie also just mentioned. You've got a real talent at that, sir. They beat them 1-0 thanks to Michael Keane header, while Leicester drew 0-0 again. Another draw this time with Brighton, who have looked fairly decent since football returned. Speaking on the home side, Everton, they've looked a lot more solid under Carlo Ancelotti, not just in terms of getting the best out of strikers such as Dominic Calvert-Lewin and Richarlison, but they've looked more defensively solid. We saw that in the 0-0 draw against Liverpool, and then the 1-0 against Norwich, where Norwich did test for a lot of the game. Graham, how have you seen the change in style under Carlo Ancelotti affecting the club and their chances for the run-in?
I think understandably so, he's kind of went back to basics a little bit and been a bit more cautious and focusing on defence first, and it kind of balances that out. But one of his main jobs, one of the main successes of Ancelotti so far, is him unlocking the key to Dominic Calvert-Lewin. And so when you put those two things together, it's led to Everton being a much better side under him than they were under Marco Silva. They kind of have a long way to go still. I still look at their team and see a lot of holes, a lot of gaps they need to fill. I think the midfield's still a bit iffy, but I have faith that under Ancelotti, and they've got a good amount of money, that Everton could sign players for that position.
And we'll keep talking about Everton. They've still got holes to fill, but with money that they will be willing to throw around with kind of recent influx of cash that the owners have had over the years, and a manager who knows exactly how to spend money to fit a team for his standards, we really could see them pushing European football for the next couple of seasons. They're not out of the race just yet, though. They really could, in the next couple of games, rocket into a European place. They sit 12th just now, but they're only 4 points off Spurs in 7th, who they play next weekend. Struan, should they win the next two games, I mean, could we consider them for having a Europa League place nailed on, or is it going to be a lot more difficult than that?
Everton's always a bit of a tricky one with me that's under Ancelotti, because at times they look fantastic and they've turned a corner, but then you kind of see the old Everton coming out. I mean, just before the break, they were in quite a good bit of form, and then they got absolutely destroyed 4-0 by Chelsea. But then they came back and they held Liverpool 0-0, beat it Norwich 1-0. I think they definitely could, but I just think they need that run. They need to keep their consistency going, and I think with their defence, it's extremely hard to do. But I reckon they could push for a European place, especially a Europa League place.
And that defence is obviously, of course, missing Yerry Mina, their big pickup from Barcelona in the summer. They're missing him, they're missing Djibril Sidibe, Fabian Delph, if he was any sort of inclusion, and is that Lewis Gibson I'm seeing on the Fantasy Premier League website, but whether he was ever going to get a look in, I'm not certain. He would have still been an option, though. We'll take away from Everton a bit and look more at their opposition in Leicester. They've come back from their three-month break and have lost any and all momentum that they once had. They ended the last game was before the restart, was a 4-0 destruction over Aston Villa. But even before that, they were very, very inconsistent and have come back and have not been able to win just yet. Jamie, they've had two draws with so-called kind of lesser teams in Watford and Brighton, and have really allowed Chelsea to cut the gap to just 1 point with 7 games to go. What do they do in order to get their Champions League hopes back on track?
I suppose they need to start scoring goals again, to put it quite simply. I don't think Leicester usually shipping off a lot of goals, but I thought against Brighton, Brighton bossed them. I thought they absolutely bossed them off the park. I didn't think it was a great game of football, but particularly in the first half, I thought Brighton should have been a couple of goals up, and to be fair, I was really impressed with Brighton in the way they went about the game. I thought the young Connolly boy up front, him and Mopey were excellent. Obviously Mopey saw his penalty saved, but I thought Brighton had by far the better chances, and had every chance of winning the game. I still don't really know how Brighton didn't win the game. As for Leicester, you say that game against Villa before lockdown, that was a good result for them. But other than that, their form was dropping, and we spoke about nobody wanting to get that fourth spot. Everybody else around them was dropping points as well, and I think that's the only reason that Leicester are still in third, is because that everybody else has been really inconsistent as well, apart from obviously Liverpool and City as well. Usually both very consistent. Everybody else has been a bit inconsistent. So Leicester need to start scoring goals again. Vardy's goals have dried up, and I think everybody knew that Vardy's goals were very important to that Leicester team, and should they dry up, then they would be in trouble, and that's what's happened. They've got some tough games coming up as well. They still got to play United, Everton. They got Chelsea in the cup, obviously. Arsenal, Sheffield United. So I'm not sure. I definitely don't fancy them for third. And as I said earlier, I wouldn't be surprised if Man United came up and pipped them for fourth spot. But the defence, I don't have too many concerns about. But I think they just need to start scoring goals again. Vardy.
If I can just pick up on that, I think when you look at Leicester's stats, they kind of regressed back to the mean, in the sense that they, at the start of the season, were scoring more goals than you would think based on their XG. Their conversion rate was ridiculously high for the team. For the amount of chances they created, they were scoring way more than the average team would. And I think that's just dried up. All the big players have just stopped performing. Madison, Tielemans, their wingers have never been that good to begin with. And Vardy's just... There's no goals for Vardy anymore.
They've lost Pereira as well, quite a key in the right back.
Yeah, that's massive too.
I think a lot of those kind of earlier season stats, especially kind of going in towards Christmas time where they were hitting that good batch of form, I think a lot of their XG just kind of spiked after that 9-0 game at Southampton. I think a lot of their fans and plaudits came from that one game where Southampton just capitulated completely. But looking at the two clubs since then, Southampton have probably been the more impressive, really, having turned that whole situation around where Leicester have just kind of struggled forward a bit. We'll go into a bit of a score prediction and our key players, etc., for this game. For this one, I still do think it's fairly hard to call. It really could go either way. But I've got it down as a 2-all draw. I don't think Leicester are going to be able to do enough to get the win over Everton, when Everton have looked defensively solid and Leicester have struggled to get goals. But I think this kind of bit of a break, because they don't play now until Wednesday, that game's going to be. I think they've got now until then to really focus on getting their attack flowing again, get the best out of Jamie Vardy they possibly can. And I think they will score a couple, but Everton will be able to match them, and if not better them. I've said a draw, but I could easily see it being an Everton win as well. And I think the Brazilian man who once dribbled past Van Dijk, in case he didn't make it abundantly clear, Richarlison is going to be the key man in that one. Boys, what do the rest of us think? Struan, will come to you first.
I've gone for a 1-0 Leicester. I think this is going to be their game. They're going to try and turn it around. I think they can't really afford to drop any points. They see, you know, Chelsea. I think Chelsea will overtake them, and I think they're now battling for fourth spot. But I think this one's quite hard to call, because they have the FA Cup against a team like Chelsea. If they can beat Chelsea in that, I think they'd fancy their chances. I think they probably already do of winning that, especially after like going out the League Cup earlier on to Aston Villa, heartbreaking. I think Rodgers will probably look and think, I can maybe get a cup here. You know, the top four races, it is what it is. You know, we should be able to maintain that. So I think, depending on how they play Chelsea, whether they play their full squad or maybe the odd change here and there, I think we'll see what they're going to prioritise. But I do think they'll get a 1-0 win against Everton.
Graham, who would you be backing from either of these two teams to make an impact, especially when you're talking about the fantasy football game? Who would be an inclusion from either of these squads in your team?
Well, I'm kind of leaning towards Everton winning this game. I'm off whatever train Leicester had. I think they look pathetic. And I think since he came back, Everton defensively looked really good. So I would probably go for one. If I was to pick a key player, I would pick one of the defenders, probably one of the fullbacks, either Coleman or Digne. And I'd probably say 1-0 Everton.
Good shot. And Jamie, are you fairly similar, or are you thinking it's going to be a bit of a kind of contrasting opinion between students?
This is a difference in opinion. No, I'm going 1-0 Everton as well. I thought it was a perfect excuse for me to go for a 1-1, but I'm going to go a bit out the box, a bit outside the box, and go for 1-0 to the Toffees. As for a player, I do quite like the Graham's idea of a defender, because I could see it being one of those games where, like, Holgate or something scores a header and they win 1-0, something like that. I wouldn't rush to put Richarlison or something in at the price that he is. 1-0 Everton and a defender to get a goal.
Well, there we go. I'm proud to see you kicking the habit of your 1-1. you're slowly getting better, Jamie. That's what we like to see.
I don't know how many of my seven draws. Did I not have something like seven draws in the last game week? I don't know how many of them came in.
7 out of 10 you predicted draws. We'll need to go back and check that, actually. We'll move on to the next game that we're covering today. We spoke about them earlier in the show because they were playing last night, and I'm not going to say they handed Liverpool the title, because they didn't, but they knocked City out the race. We'll say that. West Ham are playing Chelsea, of all teams, on Wednesday next week as well. No, is it Wednesday? It is Wednesday. In the last games, West Ham lost again. They lost 2-0 to what they would consider bitter rivals, but I don't know if Spurs think the same way. They lost to Spurs 2-0, while Chelsea beat City 2-1 in a game that we've already mentioned a lot of. It's another loss that put West Ham in an even more precarious position in terms of relegation. Struan, if they lose this game on Wednesday, how likely is it that they end up playing Championship football next season?
I think it's a real possibility. Just looking at the table, you know, they're level on points with Bournemouth and Aston Villa, who are in 19th and 18th respectively, one behind Watford in 16th. It's really close at the bottom there. I think they'll be looking over to Bournemouth, who play Newcastle. I'm sorry, can't get the words out there, which could be a winnable game for Bournemouth potentially. And I think, you know, Watford as well have a game against Southampton. You never know how that's going to go. But I think West Ham have just been so poor recently. I really don't think David Moyes was the right appointment to steady the ship or anything. They just looked really poor. And I think this is going to be a really easy win for Chelsea.
I think that you've put it exactly right. I don't think, if you're going to try and save a sinking ship, you don't bring in David Moyes. What's interesting with it, and looking at their run-in, they've got they've got Chelsea, they've got and Man United in the top half. Then Newcastle and Burnley aren't easy games either, but then they've got Norwich, Watford, and then Aston Villa on the last day. So the relegation battle is really going to go down to the wire.
That's considerably easier for West Ham than it is for Bournemouth and Villa. Mm-hmm. Both Bournemouth and Villa have tough fixtures.
So do you see West Ham being more likely to stay up than Bournemouth and Villa, Graham?
Well, when I wrote the thing for the takeaways last week, I thought Aston Villa, just because I think they have the best individual players, mm-hmm. and in Dean Smith, the manager, it's not a complete loser. like David Moyes is.
Yeah, well, that's fair.
But looking at their fixture, Villa got to be Liverpool, Man United, Everton, Arsenal, so they have a tough run. And I still think I would back Villa, but I think it's going to be mighty close between West Ham, Bournemouth and Villa.
It will be interesting. I think now that the title race is done, we can look elsewhere, and there's still other two races going on in terms of the top four push and the relegation battle. We'll take a look at the other end of the table in the top four push. I mean, we've looked at Chelsea, and they really have picked up from where they left off with that good spell of form they had before the break. They had a massive win against Manchester City last night, and we've already kind of established that they look fairly certain of getting top four. But Graham, is that just a Chelsea fan of me being a bit too optimistic, or would you say that they are odds on probably the favourites at the moment to qualify out the chasing pack?
I think usually odds on favourite to finish third. Now, I thought yesterday you were really impressive. I mean, you look at the XG for that game, it was an absolute annihilation based on it. De Bruyne's free kick was essentially the only big chance City had to score from where the Citadel and hit the post. Other than that, Chelsea just battered them. I think some of the break did just good, because I think you were kind of teetering a little bit. I allowed you to get Pulisic back, who I thought yesterday was absolutely incredible. Mm-hmm. And the midfield, the injury problems there have subsided. And so I think the yous are looking good, and I would probably bet the house on yous finishing in the top four.
Yeah, definitely.
You mentioned him there, and I've been buzzing about him being back ever since the Aston Villa game. But I wrote about Christian Pulisic for this Game Week's Takeaway article, which at the time of recording isn't published yet, but it will be later today. Jamie, you've been watching him kind of the same amount as I have. How have you seen his first season in England, and how important is he going to be for not only the rest of this season, but in seasons to come in this Chelsea team?
Yeah, he's going to be massive. You know, we know what quality Chelsea have going forward at the moment, and obviously a couple more additions in the summer. So, providing they're all able to stay fit and they are able to link up together and they get on all right, then I think it's a really exciting time for Chelsea. And I was just saying to my dad this morning that personally, I really fancy Chelsea to be in the top two next season. And I know that's a very bold claim to make at this stage, but I think the team on paper has potential, certainly, to be a top two team. I think there's a bit of uncertainty at Man City at the moment, for me anyway, whether, you know, Guardiola's going to stay, whether he's going to go. I don't know, I just wouldn't be convinced about next season, personally, of the current top two staying the same. I think Chelsea will be much closer than the, what, 30 points or something, 32 points that they're behind Liverpool now. I think that gap will be much shorter next season. And if guys like Pulisic and even guys like Mount, who particularly against Aston Villa I was really impressed with, can stay fit and keep contributing goals from the midfield. Chelsea, obviously, I don't think we've scored enough goals. We've not had a striker that's scored enough goals this season. The midfield have chipped in, and that's kind of kept us in the top four. But if the midfield can keep chipping in goals next season, and someone like Werner comes in and, you know, usually should anyway, should guarantee you goals, then I think Chelsea will be very hard to beat next season.
I do agree, and I think they're going to be especially hard to beat if you're West Ham next Wednesday night.
Mm.
Talking about a score prediction for this one, I've just gone a fairly simple 3-0 to Chelsea. I just don't think West Ham are going to bother this Chelsea team that are really just kind of going from strength to strength at the moment. They're just building on what they laid down for themselves before lockdown. They've come out swinging. They got the result back against Aston Villa. And despite, I think I saw it was only the second time out of 31 games this season where they've held less possession than the opposition. They still got the win. It was a bit of a smash and grab tactic almost, but it worked in their favour against City, and I'm very thankful for it. I don't think it's going to be the same. I think it's going to be a lot more like the Aston Villa game, but depending on who they start, I think it's going to be a lot more of an efficient performance. They're going to get a goal fairly early on, and then West Ham are just not going to be able to fight that. So I'm going 3-0, and I'm backing Tammy Abraham to get a decent performance. He's not started since the restart. He's come off the bench both times, and he got awarded the assist for the penalty, despite it being a handball, which was an interesting thing to think about. He obviously got the final touch before Fernandinho punched it off the line. So I think he will start against West Ham, and I would back him to get another goal or potentially two for his tally this season. Jamie, are you of a similar mind, or are you thinking it's going to be a bit more evenly matched?
I certainly can't see past Chelsea. I think this West Ham team are just kind of going through the motions at the moment. I think they're a team that's really low in confidence, and I just don't see, you know, usually you can speak about a game being a springboard for a team to get themselves out of trouble, and I just can't see it. I just can't see it being this one. As much as I try and be kind of balanced and neutral, I just can't see West Ham getting anything from this game. However, I do think it'll be a wee bit closer than your 3-0. I've gone for a slender 1-0 win for Chelsea.
Fair enough. I can accept that. I'll not hold that against you. Graham, how do you see this one panning out? Have West Ham get any hope here whatsoever?
No, I think you're quite spot on with what you were saying about it, Jack. But I think West Ham just kind of don't have enough of Chelsea, and it'll be fairly comfortable for you. I would probably say about 2-0, I'm not sure. I'm not too keen on predicting massive wins at the moment. Mm-hmm. Since I know the turn, there's not been a huge amount of goals, but I think Chelsea will be comfortable in this game.
Struan, would you agree with that?
Yeah, I'd literally agree with every point that's been made, pretty much. I've gone 3-0
as well. 3-0
as well.
There we go. Any players anyone wants to highlight for fantasy? Because, I mean, there's probably a couple that I would suggest. And Pulisic and probably Mount, because he's looked sharp since the restart happened. But that's just me saying that. I don't know if there's any differences in opinion.
I mean, Mount's a cheap option. And as I say, I was impressed with him, you know, last night and against Aston Villa. You know, we've all gone for a clean sheet there. I don't know who we've got after West Ham, but, you know, I don't know how, if it's worth maybe see if you can find a cheap Chelsea defender, somebody like Azpilicueta or something. I don't know. You know, we've all gone for a clean sheet there, so
Watford at home after West Ham.
And yeah, so, you know, I would like to think that we would get a couple of clean sheets there. And I know our defence hasn't been great this season, and we have leaked a lot of goals, but, you know, I fancy a clean sheet next Wednesday or whenever it is. So, yeah, as well as your Mounts and Pulisic's and Abrahams and whatnot, I think there should be plenty of high scorers in this Chelsea team over the next couple of game weeks.
Good shout. Any final motions? I mean, would we even suggest a West Ham player at this point, or is it a bit of a futile motion?
Yeah, Mikel Antonio randomly pops up with goals in these kind of games, doesn't he?
Yeah, I thought he would. He was my key player against Tottenham. And I thought he put in a good shift on his own, but up front, but I just can't see it.
Enough scraps, isn't he? He's not getting any service.
Yeah.
Well, that kind of seals the deal for that one. That was fairly agreed on that one. That's good. We'll move on to the final game we're going in a bit more detail about. Huge in terms of the top four race, or rather the top six race, I suppose you could call it, with European places, because Sheffield United are hosting Spurs at Bramall Lane. You look back, Sheffield United, they suffered a 3-0 defeat to Manchester United, as mentioned earlier, and Spurs, again, they beat West Ham 2-0. It's 2 3-0 defeats in a row for Chris Wilder's Sheffield United side. I mean, Jamie, you had a look at the problems for this game week, the takeaway for the article. What do they need to do in order to turn their fortunes around the European qualification? Because we know they don't really have an out-and-out goal scorer, and people seem to have figured out their back five. So what can they do if they want to keep it alive?
I've been thinking about it a lot, and, you know, obviously we speak about, you know, 6 goals in 2 games, and, you know, that for me, the Old Trafford, the Old Trafford game was the writing was just on the wall. I just fancied them to get a bit of a doing. The fact they were missing Henderson and they were missing John Egan as well. Mm-hmm. You know, Phil Jagielka comes in to the starting 11, and he's 37 or something. It's not who you want to be starting centre back at Old Trafford. You know, it's just as simple as that. The Newcastle game, you know, I thought they were doing all right until the red card, and so, you know, I can't decide whether I'm being a bit harsh by saying, you know, this is their bubble burst, their form's out the window now, and, you know, ultimately it's 1.5 games, really, if you like, because it was just the second half against Newcastle. You know, they have a chance now, a home game against Tottenham, to silence the doubters like myself. They need to tighten up at the back. Everybody knows, as you highlighted, that they don't score an awful lot of goals, but usually they're very hard to score against, and especially at home. However, you know, with no fans, I don't know whether that'll make much of a difference. You know, we spoke about the Bundesliga, how the away teams seem to be faring far superior. You know, so it is a tough game to call. I wouldn't really rush to put a bet on this game. I think my money would be firmly in my pocket. It could go either way. I'll go with 1-1, and I don't really know anything for a key player, to be honest. There's nobody really jumping out at me. Maybe somebody like Bergwijn if he starts, but
I mean, I'm looking at their run-in just now. I'm looking at Sheffield United run-in. They've got the Spurs game, Burnley away, which isn't going to be easy.
It's never easy.
Then in the run of four, Wolves, Chelsea, Leicester, and Everton.
Yeah.
All going to be chasing similar places. So, and then Southampton on the final day at the end of July. It's really not going to be an easy time for them, and they really need to get this game and potentially next game right if they want to start building for being able to compete, really.
Yeah, you need to go into these sort of runs with some form, and, you know, I think a win against Tottenham would be priceless for them to take forward, to try and build on going into that, as we say, that really difficult run-in for them.
Looking at their run and speaking about this game against Tottenham, both are chasing very similar positions, Graham. I don't know if I'm being a bit kind of overzealous and just kind of thinking of it very plainly, but with the huge kind of European ramifications for both teams, would it be safe to assume that whoever wins this game would then go on to secure European qualification, or had a better chance to, rather, or is it something else completely different entirely?
I think undoubtedly that it gives them a better chance, but I wouldn't also say that it guarantees it. You know, all the teams around like 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th place are all very inconsistent. You wouldn't be surprised if Spurs won this game and then went in a run of form if they didn't win in 4 games. So, just to put my perspective, I'm leaning towards Tottenham because I kind of am concerned about Sheffield United. And I think Tottenham will get in the European place. I think Sheffield United actually could fall out even in the bottom half of the table at this point. But I'm really, really not sure that this game is the actual de facto kind of decider for a European spot.
It would be a shame to see them drop into the bottom half of the table, Sheffield United, especially looking at their run and seeing who they're going to be playing, because no one could have predicted that they would even be in this conversation just now, this time last year when they were coming up. And they were almost odds on to go right back down because no one thought they would be able to cope with the Premier League's elite clubs, but they have done on numerous occasions, and I think regardless of what happens to them, they should still view this season as a success, because no one could have predicted that they would be in the position that they're in, as I said already. Struan, we'll take a quick look at Tottenham. I mean, they finally got their squad to a point where Mourinho has every single asset available to him. One of those, of course, being Harry Kane, who, despite looking absolutely shattered in both the games that he's played so far, he's managed to come up big against West Ham and scored one. Probably could have had maybe two or three, but he still got the all-important goal that made it 2-0 and effectively shut off any chance for West Ham to get a point or even three. What does that say about the nature of Harry Kane himself and what he's been willing to do, essentially running himself into the ground in both games, both for the benefit of his team?
I think he just wants to get back out there. I think it was New Year's Day was the last game he played, you know, six months without football. And if somebody of his quality, he wants to be up there. He'll probably be looking at the Premier League Golden Boot standings and seeing he's, you know, sixth, seventh down there. And he just won't be happy with that given his form. And he's had quite bad injuries last season as well as this one. And I think a lot of the media has been going after him a wee bit as well. You know, Mourinho defended him, saying, you know, my strikers have scored a lot of goals. So I think that'll be kind of playing on his mind a little bit, you know, like, am I still going to be able to score without, you know, the Pochettino press and everything like that? But I think he will come better. I think when you look at this game, these were two teams who Tottenham didn't need, you know, the whole stoppage of football, but they've benefited from it, I would say, one of the most. You know, Steven Bergwijn, Heung-Min Son and Harry Kane were all missing, as well as their form. You know, they'd out of the last five games, they'd lost four and drew one. Whereas Sheffield United, you know, they were doing really well beforehand. And I just think, given how they've come back, it's really hurt them and stumped them. And I think it's the benefit of Tottenham for this game. So I think Tottenham will come away with the win here. But I was watching the Leeds United documentary on Amazon Prime, Take Us Home. And there's a wee bit with Sheffield United. Obviously, they finished second last season. And when you see the team, it's so similar to the team that are in the Premier League now. And I think that's just even more credit to the job Wilder has done, the fact that they're competing for Europe with nearly the exact same team that was in the Championship, especially when you see other teams, you know, like Aston Villa, who spent over $100 million coming up and stuff like that, and they're down in the relegation zone.
Yeah,
And it was a similar situation with Fulham the year prior. So I think Sheffield United have had a really good season, but I just think they're struggling. I think they missed their fans big time. Bad injuries as well. I think before the lockdown, they'd only conceded three goals in one game, which was the 3-3 with United with no Dean Henderson. And now it's happened 2 weeks in a row. Obviously, they have had a red card and missing Henderson again, but they've got Arsenal in the cup. I don't know if that'll maybe be playing on Wilder's mind, you know. Okay, maybe the European places are gone, but there is an FA Cup. And winning the FA Cup in his first season in the Premier League would be incredible as well.
Absolutely.
I think obviously Klopp is the manager of the season, you know, that there's no doubt about that, but I would definitely have Chris Wilder as my second.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Just for this season, the style they've played. Yeah. I think a lot of neutrals have enjoyed watching Sheffield United this season, but I can't see it past a Spurs win.
Nor can I. That's what I've gone for a 2-0 win to Spurs. I just can't see Sheffield United getting anything out of this game. I don't really think they would be able to kind of combat Spurs. I say that, but then it's a Mourinho team, so realistically anything is possible. He can lose to the tiniest of minnows and then blame the pitch for it or blame the floodlights. I don't know what he's going to come out with if he loses this one. That being said, I still am predicting the 2-0. I think Harry Kane's going to be involved again in terms of just his sheer ability, sheer goal-scoring prowess. Jamie's delivered his typical 1-1. We have to get one out of him today at least. Struan, would you go for the Spurs win in this one?
Yeah, I think I've seen, same as you, I'm a 2-0 Spurs win. I think Sheffield United, they're just blunt. They don't score anything at the moment. I don't know where a goal can come from with that team. Mm-hmm. And I think Oliver Norwood might also be missing. He came off at half-time, which is a huge part of the creativity in their midfield as well. And I just think Spurs are back to full fitness. I think they'll have it easily.
Graham, are you in a similar mind? But I mean, you've been a kind of Sheffield United man for the majority of the season. You've been a kind of biggest supporter out of us lot. So are you giving them a bit more of a chance, or is it a Spurs victory again?
No, I'm really not. I think I've fallen off it. I think to emphasise Struan's point about them being blunted and they can't score. Three shots on target in three games so far since they came back for Sheffield United. which I can't see. Maybe they'll get more shots on target against Spurs at home, but I don't see them scoring any goals.
No.
I think that's 3-2 nils it'll be. I actually think Spurs have looked pretty good in two games that they've played. They will get a point against Man U, a Man U team that I'm pretty high on at the moment. Mm-hmm. And I think they look good, but I think Sheffield United are going the other way. So 2-0 for me.
Thing is, even when Sheffield United do score, it doesn't count anyway. So they've got no chance really.
Yeah, technology is not in their corner, unfortunately. I mean, we almost kind of feel on this show inclined to support Sheffield United regardless because of how cheap their players are and how often they've turned up. But I think for this one, we would have to back Tottenham. So Harry Kane, if you can get him in for the price he is. Dele Alli's, I think, still at near 9 million. Son's the same. Bergwijn's a cheaper option. He might not start, but he'd still be there. He'd probably have an impact off the bench in some variety. Even still, I wouldn't back the Spurs backline whatsoever. I just think they are far too inconsistent to be able to perform. And even though three of us have predicted a 2-0, we're always more wrong than we are right. So just keep that in mind. That brings an end to the three bigger games that we were going to be covering. We'll go into what we did last week and give you three quickfire games, some of which have fair bit of importance in terms of what it means for either teams. And one of which is, of course, going to be the Brexit game of the week, which made its return in the last episode. We'll start with the first game of the game week being Villa and Wolves. Both teams obviously have a lot to play for. Villa having earned a decent point at Newcastle to help their survival hopes, while Wolves, again, they won, making it 2-2 since the restart. Jamie, for you, how do you see this one panning out?
Yeah, it's a really good game. I'm really looking forward to this one. I think it could be a good one. You know, both teams obviously have a lot to play for there, as you've said. Wolves kind of struggled against Bournemouth, really. It seemed to struggle to break them down, but eventually it did come, and it was no surprise to see Traore and Jimenez linking up again. And I think if they are to get the 3 points against Villa on Saturday, then those two will be key again. I do think they'll have enough, but I do think it'll be quite a close game. I'm going to put it down for 2-1 to Wolves. And I think either of Jimenez or Traore should be in your team. I've got Matt Doherty in my team as well. I've had him in for the last couple of weeks, although he was on my bench for the West Ham game where he scored something like 13 points or something. I wasn't very happy with that, but I think he's a good he would be a good addition to your team. But yeah, a Wolves win, but I think it'll be a good game. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, no, it'll be a good one to kick the game week off. I've gone for the same. I've gone for a 2-1 to Wolves. I think it's going to be another combination play between Adama and Jimenez, like we've seen so many times in recent games, where they've just been able to combine just to unlock defences. So that seems to be a fairly solid opinion all around. We'll move on to what we've had. We brought it back last week with the Brexit game of the week. And Palace, it's Palace and Burnley. Burnley are involved again. I don't think there's any doubt in my mind that Burnley are the most Brexit team, so almost any game involving them is in contention. But Struan, with this one, it's a bit more interesting because the way I see it, it's potentially the two most underrated defences in the league when you look at clean sheets. I mean, considering how many Vicente Guaita and Nick Pope have kept between themselves, with Pope grabbing another one against Watford at the weekend there. It's almost nailed on for the perfect 0-0, isn't it?
Yep. Absolutely. They're bang the same points in the league and everything. It is literally almost an immovable object meets an immovable object. And I think that's exactly how the game's going to go. I think it could be born. I want to praise Crystal Palace this season because I think they don't really get a lot of mentions, but you know, they're only 1 point behind Arsenal, 2 behind Sheffield, and a win behind Spurs. So I think that is really impressive. Defensively, they've been fantastic. I think Gary Cahill on a free signing, I think, you know, at the summer, nobody really made anything of it because, oh, he was past it or whatever, you know, he's not really good anymore, but he's been fantastic. I think Jordan Ayew could be one of the outside shouts for signing of the season. I think his goals have won them 14 points this year, and, I mean, those goals are not going to come from anywhere else, given Benteke's form, and Zaha has been pretty poor by his standards this season. Burnley, on the other hand, are just a bit... Well, they are Burnley, you know, they've Sean Dyche could be off as well.
Yeah,
I think that'll be a huge change of a different manager, just because we all know how Burnley play. We just know it's always going to be two sets of four. Set pieces will be their goals, you know, Barnes and Wood up front, whatever. I think Mark Hughes is one of the favourites to take over, but I don't know where Dyche will go. I don't know, he's done pretty well. I think he's earned his status as a Premier League manager, but this game is screaming for 0-0. And you're speaking about underrated defences. I think before football came back, Burnley and Palace were one of three teams in the Premier League whose centre-back partnership had no errors leading to goals, which is pretty impressive. But I think Ben Mee gave away a penalty against Man City, so I think that's probably going to count as an error there.
Did you just say that point about the centre-back duels leading to goals because you know the third one's Man United? Did you just want to bring that up again?
Well, if you're bringing it up, we'll talk about that another time. But no, I do think that is really impressive, though, from both of those teams. I think normally you'd consider Palace and Burnley to kind of be like 14, 15. You know, they're not going to get relegated. But this year, they could get European football. It's unlikely, but as I said, they're only one win behind Tottenham, which is there. They've got no cup competitions left. You know, they can focus on the league. I just think about squad depth will be the problem, especially for both. I mean, looking at their benches, I think Palace could only name 8 subs against Liverpool. And then with Burnley as well, against Manchester City, I think they had 2 senior players. So I think it's very much they have 2 sets of 11, and if they do have injuries, I think they will struggle. But I've gone for a 1-0 Crystal Palace.
I think,
because I hope there's a goal. I'm trying to be optimistic.
I'd like to see a goal, but I think it's going to take a moment of brilliance from the likes of an Ayew Azaha or Dwight McNeil, for example, especially for Burnley when they're lacking Wood and Barnes at the moment. I've gone for a 0-0 personally because I think it's just got a nil. It's, as I said, a perfect 0-0 game. We'll move on and talk for the final game that we're talking about. It almost seems like an anti-climax at this point because realistically it could have been the biggest game of the season.
Oh no.
It could have been, but with the league wrapped up now, it's just more of a coronation ceremony. Graham, you're going to be enjoying the Guard of Honour that's anticipated. So are we expecting Liverpool to take this game and any others from now on as seriously as they've done the rest of the season?
Well, next week I'm not taking the game seriously. I only care about the Guard of Honour to see Raheem Sterling and the boys lined up either side as Superman Jordan Henderson and the boys walk out. And wait, can they do it? I guess you asked, like, can you do a Guard of Honour? Is that not break the 2-metre rule?
I think the away team have to walk out before the home team come onto the pitch normally, so I don't know if they're actually going to be allowed to unless they go like the whole length of the pitch as the guards. They're all 2 metres apart in the Liverpool.
I think they'd like that
one
more.
By one by one.
I think Liverpool fans would like that more, the whole pitch, just with the guards.
Yeah, could do a parade around it, do a lap of honour.
I'm happy just to have Raheem Sterling do a Guard of Honour by himself, and the rest of them can always play normally.
I think, isn't De Bruyne like a Liverpool fan boyhood or something, and his idol was Michael Owen?
Imagine your mate, your icon.
On a random note there, sorry.
I could not tell you. But, aside from the Guard of Honour, how do you see this game going?
I do think there's a potential for Liverpool to kind of have a bit of a come down from winning the league. I do think after the game, it's like they will focus up again. I think it might lose, and it might be a reality check. They do want to beat the record. They need to win 5 of the last 7 games to get the points record. Mm-hmm. And I think with them not winning any competitions, they are going to go for it. It's not going to be let's just get all the kids out. They can get their medals and stuff like that. I do think they're going to go for the record.
Yeah.
But I think next week, Sank City will be wanting to prove a point that we're still the best team in the league. In a way, like we're still as good as this team. And so for me, next week City will win. Mm-hmm. But it's not like Liverpool are going to spend the last 7 games just doing nothing. They are going to go back to their normal best.
I mean, you look and looking at City, not City, sorry, Liverpool's run. They probably will break that points record. I mean, Man City are potentially going to be a slip up. Chelsea potentially a slip up if Billy Gilmore plays, and I would say Arsenal, but it's Arsenal, and Liverpool should have no problems. So they'll beat Villa, Brighton, Burnley, Arsenal, and Newcastle, and that'll get
Chelsea.
Them. Okay, well, and probably Chelsea.
It's at Anfield, isn't it?
And Manchester.
Yeah, it's at Anfield. Yeah. You've just predicted a City win, but they've just
changed my mind.
He's still drinking in the championship champagne.
I want Liverpool players to not train once, just drink up into that game and see.
Andy Robertson would. Dejan Lovren would, because he is that committed to the...
It is funny. In all the videos you see, it's always like the same players that are front and centre in all the videos in one part of them. Van Dijk's always there. Fabinho and Alisson are always there. Klopp's always there.
It was every interview I saw last night in the... Liverpool players came rushing in. It was Lovren first in the door every single time. I think it was when Van Dijk was doing his interview with the BBC. I just saw Lovren just bolt in and more or less rugby tackle him off the chair, screaming.
My favourite part of that was when BT had Jordan Henderson in it, and somebody must have found out what the BT Sports Zoom name was. So there was just tons and tons of like friend requests while they were interviewing Jordan Henderson.
Really?
Just one random. Aye, it was so funny. It just kept going off, and then Kenny Dalglish was...
Kenny Dalglish's phone.
And his phone, at the end, you can tell he's blitzed at the end, he just proves it by like lifting the champagne glass up.
Good on him. That wraps up the games we're going to be talking about this week. We're going to wrap up the show with our fantasy team of the week. This is where we combine the fixtures we talked about, the fixtures we not talked about, and give you our best possible idea of a perfect team going into this set of fixtures. We'll start the keepers. I've picked 4 out of a possible 20, obviously. Looking at the fixture list. As we've already discussed with the perfect 0-0, Pope or Guaita are both very good shouts. I've also chucked Emiliano Martinez in because Arsenal are playing Norwich at home. And I don't really think Norwich are more or less about to dive back down in the Championship, so I don't really see them threatening Arsenal at all. And my last pick would be Martin Dubravka at Newcastle, back from injury, and being one of the most underrated goalkeepers in the league and saving Newcastle many, many a time. They're playing Bournemouth on the south coast, and Bournemouth have just looked feeble and unthreatening since the restart, so I don't see them providing Newcastle with many problems. Boys, is there anyone that I've missed out that you would want to include, or have I kind of wrapped up the suggestions with that one there?
No, mine's just Dubravka. That's my goalie.
Mine's is Nick Pope.
Mine's is Henderson.
Deanie Henderson. Ooh.
Which is a bit
contradictory to what we were saying earlier. Or what yous were saying earlier.
I didn't really have a choice because I felt I had to take Cantwell out. I'd have put Mason Mount in for that. That was my substitute this week.
Okay. That's not a bad.
So I think that's more because I don't think Norwich are going to get anything against Arsenal. But
that's fair play. That would have wrapped up lovely. Nice and quickly. We'll move on, look at the defence. Again, I suppose any defenders from any of the 4 teams that Pope, Guaita, Martinez and Dubravka are playing for. I've also chucked Azpilicueta in for a mention. Jamie, you said Chelsea, Chelsea defender in the next couple of weeks could be crucial. And Azpilicueta got 2 assists against Aston Villa. So he's effective at both ends of the pitch. And my last shout was Michael Keane at Everton. I got the goal, and depending on how Everton play against Leicester, they could have another incredibly impressive defensive performance against a misfiring Leicester City, so I could see an Everton defender being a decent shout for this week. Anyone else, any other suggestions want to get thrown into the mix there?
I quite like Lamptey from Brighton against Leicester. I don't know if I think Brighton have got United coming up, so I don't know what that'll be in terms of clean sheets, but I thought it was really impressive. Just he's quite a cheap option as well.
Lamptey had a good game, yeah. I've got Gary Cahill, Matt Doherty, and then I've got Alexander-Arnold and Walker, so I wouldn't necessarily recommend the latter two because I think there'll probably be goals in that game, but yeah. I think Doherty's a good shout, and I think Cahill because I think Palace will keep a clean sheet.
I made a change during the podcast, I took out, I had 3 Sheffield United defenders when they came back, which obviously has not went well. So I took out Chris Basham and I put in Willie Bolly from Wolves. I think Wolves have like our solid defensive team. I think you can go wrong with any of their centre backs because they're all quite cheap.
I like Willie Bolly. He's a good player. Very good player. Moving up to midfield, the obvious contenders are jumping out again. For Liverpool City, you can take your pick from whoever you want, really. De Bruyne scored a gobsmacking free kick against Chelsea, just kind of proving once again why he shouldn't have been let go, but we don't talk about that. Salah and Mane will probably be effective in playing City. Anyone else got any suggestions for this one? Because midfield I struggled with this week, I'm not going to lie.
Maybe Milivojevic at Palace, if there's not going to be many goals, could be a penalty, and he had a great free kick as well against Bournemouth. He's quite cheap.
I've got De Bruyne, I've got Fernandes, I do really like him, and I've got John McGinn as well, and that's my midfield three.
You're not playing a three in the midfield?
Three in midfield, three up front.
You might notice I took out McGinn because I think he's been quite meh since he came back, and I swapped him for another Wolves player. I put it down my priority now. I guess quite stupid that I didn't have a minute to begin with. I don't know, I have his male star, who's not done much since we came back, but I still have faith that he's going to walk for Chiquita, man. Yeah. If they're going to do something, they played Southampton, so there is goals available there.
I'd chucked Joe Willock's name into the conversation purely for the fact that he's going to get minutes against Norwich, and he got a goal against who the hell did Arsenal play?
Southampton.
I don't think I've ever recommended an Arsenal player. Not for like two. It's gonna be like 2 years of like PTSD therapy before I can recommend an Arsenal player.
He's back from his suspension though, isn't he? That was only 2 games.
Yes.
Free kick on the edge of the area.
I wouldn't even trust him with that. And then wrapping up with the striking options, I've picked three kind of bigger names for big performances this week. I said Kane, Raul Jimenez, and Danny Ings as well. Anyone want to jump in with another option?
I had the latter two. I had Jimenez as my captain, but I think Kane would shout as well. I forgot much of his at high selected.
My one transfer this week was taking out Jamie Vardy, who was last week's captain, and I've brought in Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang and given him the captain's armband.
It's brave.
It is brave. They are playing Norwich though, and Jimenez and Deeney are my other two strikers. I just think Watford home to Southampton. I think they'll stay up, and I think we speak about these relegation teams sometimes having more to play for than others who are maybe slightly above them, and I just think that Deeney will be crucial for Watford's chances in this run-in. So I think he's a relatively cheap option, but I'm not sure how long he'll last in my team.
Struan, did you have anyone different just to wrap us up here?
I've got Eddie Nketiah from Arsenal, who I basically put him in earlier on in the free chances because he was quite a cheap option. And he's kind of like Arteta's Jesus, the way Pep, when he first came in, he played Jesus over Aguero because he did a lot more running. And he's just kind of preferred him to Lacazette. And against a team like Norwich, probably going to score 2-3 goals, Arsenal. And because he scored at the weekend as well, albeit a horrific mistake from McCarthy, his first of two. I think, he's not going to get dropped after scoring a goal in a pretty decent game all around. So I think he's like 4 million as well. And I think I'd go with him. And then I've also got Abraham, and sadly I've kept Vardy in my team. Because it's just one of them. The second I take him out, he's going to drop a hat trick. So,
I
can't risk it.
And you can't go around dropping points or making multiple transfers to lose you points, because I'm breathing down your neck of the table. Yeah, boy.
Nine separate. I've dropped Fleck to the bench as well, and I've put Mason. As I said, I brought Mason Mount in.
I still need to make my transfer. I don't know what I'm going to do this week. If I'm going to do anything, or I might just save it for next week, where I could get rid of Abraham and Fleck and bring in Pulisic and Ings. There's some tinkering to be done with Giroud Sandstorm. I think I'm going to get it right over the next couple of days. Well, that brings today's episode of the Fantasy Ramble to a close. I want to thank each and every one of you very much for listening, as the boys do as well. You can find all of us on Twitter through the @FantasyRamble Twitter account, and you should keep your eyes peeled there for our predictions, and make sure you check out our Premier League Takeaways article up on Energy Sport when it comes out this weekend. A big thank you to Struan, Graham and Jamie for joining me today. I've been Jack Donnelly. This has been the Fantasy Ramble from Energy Sport. Thank you very much for listening, and we will see you next time.